On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Whether you were watching or not, America shared a moment last night.
The winner of American Idol Season 5 is...
Grandparents, parents, and kids sat down in living rooms across the country to see the finale of American Idol. It's part classic talent show, part ultra-modern commercial packaging, and it has stormed its way to the top of the TV and music industries. It's become the great and warbling Happy Days diversion for a huge swath of America. Maybe you, maybe not you. This hour On Point, the entertainment mammoth, the cultural phenomenon that is American Idol.
This is what we dream about.
Joining me first from Hollywood, California, Studio City there, I'm joined by Michael Spire, managing editor for the entertainment paper Variety. Michael, thanks very much for being with us. Did you watch, sir?
I did indeed. I got home from work and I grabbed the remote and I put it on.
You and something like 30 million, you tell us. I mean, the numbers have just been out of this world in TV terms.
Well, 30 million is the average for a regular episode. I mean, we're talking, this is the finale, a series finale. A show's year finale, it probably will be much higher than that, and that's just astounding because, on average, the Oscars, which is, as you know, one of the it's behind the Super Bowl, the Oscars are the number two rated show every year. American Idol would certainly be in that category, and that's just for a regular episode of a regular show. So it's an amazing phenomenon. We haven't seen anything like this, even during the Seinfeld, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Cheers, those kinds of shows, nothing like this.
And it's fifth season, and it's growing, not shrinking. What's the lowdown in the industry? What do people say about this?
Yeah, that's a very weird phenomenon in massive programming, whether it's music or whether it's ratings, is that when things grow, you kind of look at each other and say, wow, how did that happen? Because usually things go the other way. Whether it's box office, it always opens big and then the next week goes down, or ratings or music sales for a DVD. But this thing is 10% bigger than it was last year. So it's hitting mass appeal unlike anything we've ever seen and like anything we've ever seen from the show itself.
And here we are, not only that 30-plus million watching, I don't know how many more possibly, something like 60 million's vote cast online and by text messaging through cell phones and the 800 number and all the rest, Ryan Seacrest saying that is more than any vote for any single president in American history. Great claims being made by Fox here. What about the money being made here?
There's money being made hand over fist on so many levels. It's not just Fox, which collects about $1.3 million per 30-second spot. I mean, that is close to being in Super Bowl territory. But there's so many piggybackers here. It's not just Fox. It's other networks that have created their own kind of shows to copy American Idol. It's the music industry. So when anyone like Barry Manilow or Queen or Shakira get an appearance or their music gets an appearance on American Idol, their music sales soar, so those record labels soar. We're talking magazine covers, so the magazine industry is benefiting. We're talking Singular, which provides all of the phone systems that work there. That's getting big. Coca-Cola has a big deal. So it's just a big shadow economy is what we call it, because it's a show that's making a lot of money for a lot of different people.
Michael Spire, please stand by. I want to bring into our conversation someone who's been there, done it, and was backstage last night. We're joined from Hollywood by Constantine Maroulis. He was a contestant last year on American Idol's fourth season, made it to the top six. That's a long way out of the thousands and thousands who flocked to the early rounds of this. Constantine, thanks for being with us. What was it like last night back there?
It was pretty amazing. A lot of intensity in the air. It was a great show, great times.
Constantine, you dreamed of being there yourself. Why did you jump into this? What was obviously fame, glory, money. Why do people do what you did, what hundreds of thousands have now done in trying to make it to that last round?
Honestly, I had honestly never seen the show before. You know, I was touring. I had been a working actor and working singer prior to the show, and an old girlfriend of mine convinced me to audition for the show when I came home from a tour of Rent, a Broadway musical, and just sort of went for it like any other job, any other casting, and soon realized that I was a part of something just much bigger than anything I could have possibly imagined, just a huge juggernaut, and I was just along for the ride. So great experience, you know, huge exposure, great people, great show.
Okay, you're the singer. You've been there. We want a sense of what you thought about how it all came down. Let's listen to Taylor Hicks a little bit more here. Here's his reaction last night after 2 hours of all kinds of fal de ral. He's finally named the new American Idol.
Taylor, what would you like to say to your fans?
Fal de ral!
USA Today called him bizarro boy, 29 years old, prematurely gray, kind of a man boy sensibility, a mean on the harmonica up against Catherine McPhee, the sort of Breck girl shampoo ad, beautiful, but not with quite the same soul in the end. What did you make of these two, Constantine?
Well, I thought it was an interesting year for the competition. I think last year, both myself and Bo brought a whole different edge to the competition. We were a bit older. We had a lot of experience on the stage. And I feel like we opened the doors for guys like Taylor and Chris this year to go out there and sort of bite the bullet and just say, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I've been trying. I've been working in this field. And this is where it's at. These are the sort of opportunities that are out there for young artists these days. The business has changed a lot. Let me go out there in front of, you know, 30-something million a night. Let me go for it, and hopefully I'll get some work out of it.
Catherine McPhee and her McPhever fans didn't make it to that final crown, but she was gracious in her loss last night.
I said to somebody before, we had our little, like, duet together, me and Taylor, and that was really fun for me. I said that I don't think I'm going to win. I don't expect to win, but if I do, it'll be great, and if I don't, it'll still be great.
Michael Spire at Variety, Constantine Maroulis, you've both watched closely. Constantine, you were there. Let me ask each of you, Constantine, you first. Why do you think this show is so wildly popular?
I just think that it has the right sort of, I don't know, this right sort of formula. It's got a bit of everything for the whole family. It's a real piece of Americana. I got to tell you, I was out, you know, chilling out with Simon Cowell last night till about a couple hours ago.
Oh, you're the man.
Talking about the show and talking about the whole process and the juggernaut that it's become, and it's just undeniable. You know, it's about the whole story, you know, and ultimately at the end of the day, it's about the talent. So it's unlike any other show on television. And listen, music has changed so much these last couple of years, the whole business, the whole field, and these are the sort of opportunities that are out there for young artists to succeed, and you cannot deny the numbers, you can't deny the tens of millions of records that they have been selling these last few years.
Numbers so big that big stars are now happy to be along with it. Prince was there last night, Mary J. Blige, I mean, Meat Loaf and Live and all kinds of big stuff. Michael Spire, you're the professional media watcher at Variety. What do you make of the juggernaut? How do you explain it exactly?
Well, it's a piece of Americana that didn't actually start in America, so that's kind of an ironic point.
You're
a great point. I mean, it's come over here. It's an import. It's a show that we didn't even begin, which is kind of rare in the television world.
Remind us of its lineage. It comes from, I mean, these contests are very big in Europe. I think this one came out of the UK.
That's right. It was called Pop Idol, and the story goes that Rupert Murdoch, you know, the owner of the Fox network, the only reason, because every network, look, this is not some brilliant stroke of genius here by the networks. I mean, a lot of networks passed on this.
They
show.
All passed on it until finally what? Rupert Murdoch's daughter said, Daddy, you got to look at this.
Correct. And she said, look, I'm a big fan. Let's give it a shot. And he did. And while that might be, you know, simplifying it a little bit, the fact is everyone passed until Fox didn't. And now it's huge. And I got to say that if we're going to give props to someone who makes this show different, Simon Cowell deserves every penny that he gets, because there are a lot of shows like this. On
30 million a year, I read somewhere yesterday. So it's a lot of pennies. You're saying that what, that tough kind of put the fork in British vicious is what makes it?
It helps it a lot, because of all the shows on TV that are reality-based like this, a lot of them have judges. A lot of them have the kind of three people on a panel making decisions. But Simon Cowell brings it to a whole new level. He's kind of an institution unto himself, and he gets a lot of razzing, but he also gets a lot of credit for this, because he's the one who really made this something to watch at the beginning, and now it's taken off unto itself.
Constantine, what do you think? You said it's all about the talent. I mean, these are obviously amateurs in many ways. You watch Taylor Hicks dance, and this guy has not taken dancing lessons.
No, he has not.
So what about the level of talent? You're a singer. How do you see it? McPhee was what conservatory trained, I think.
She spent some time at the Boston Conservatory, mm-hmm. where I did my undergraduate. And listen, she sort of comes from a musical theater kind of background. She's beautiful. Her mother's a voice teacher. You know, she comes from a good family. She's out here in Los Angeles. You know, she's been in the scene a little bit. And listen, she went for it.
Constantine, thanks for being with us.
Excellent.
Anna's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Anna, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll be brief with my comments.
Sure.
I'm going to plead guilty to being entertained by this program.
What draws you in? What grabs you?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a big circus, and I've been watching it with my kids. But I will say that I am kind of put off by the whole mean factor of it, and it's not Simon Cowell so much. It's more the making fun of the amateurs who showed up in the beginning. You know, these are real vulnerable personalities in the world, and, you know, showcasing people who are obese or androgynous or geeky looking, and, you know, sort of inviting the masses to collectively make fun of them in a kind of a cruel way.
Anna, will you stick by for just a second for listeners who haven't seen or heard that? Let's have a little taste of that. As you're right, there were more than 100,000 across the country who auditioned for Idol. Some were good, some not so good. Here's one contestant, Crystal Perezanski, early in the season, a taste of what you're talking about.
Okay, my name is Crystal. I just turned...
Now, I want to hear about your suntan.
Okay, I'm singing Anna, I'm Telling You by Jennifer Hull.
No. I want to hear about your suntan.
Oh, my suntan?
Yeah.
I go tanning?
No.
Creole lady, mama, love. Okay.
Mothers, grab your children and run for the hills. And is that what you're talking about? Simon getting down on the tanned young contestant there or something else?
Yeah. And if it's supposed to be all about, like, reaching a professional level, I wish that the conduct of the judges was a little bit more professional. I mean, you know, while I was watching this with my kids, it would break to commercial for the new cooking show, which had this psychotic cook, like, throwing pots and pans and screaming at people. And it just seems that there's this idea being presented that somehow abuse is some sort of professional necessity in this country.
And yet this is put forward as the show that all America can watch, grandparents and parents and kids. Did you vote, Anna? Were you that into it? Did your kids insist?
No, we didn't vote.
not that deep in. Thank you very much for your call, Anna. Let me turn to Altoona, Pennsylvania. Elijah's calling. Hi, Elijah. You're on the air.
Hello. My comments is that, you know, I'm a singer myself, you know, and I like the show and was taken in on it. And I critique things, you know, the performances and all like that. Bottom line, the way they do the thing as far as the voting system with America voting, you know, I think that's the only reason why it's so very popular.
Because everybody's in on it. Everybody has their say.
Exactly. Everybody got their say. And it's just like the voting system in America. You know, they could be right or wrong. I mean, he could be the worst guy in the world, but yet and still, you know, he can get in there.
You're a singer, Elijah. What did you think of the way the millions voted last night? Taylor Hicks.
Well, you know, actually, I had not seen it. I'm a tractor trailer driver. I was busy, but I had not seen it. Taylor, you know, just like he said, just like the one guy said, his comments, I don't think his marketability is going to allow him to really blow up and be be something force out there.
We got it. So even on the road, a singer can't see it, but you can't avoid it. You can't avoid hearing it, hearing the music of American Idol. Elijah, thanks for calling. Let me get another call here from Mason City, Iowa. John is on the line. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I also kind of second what the previous caller said about judging, except for I don't look at it in a favorable thing. I think it's actually pretty pathetic. You know, first of all, these people aren't even singing their own music.
You mean the judging is pathetic or the performances?
No, the judging, the whole aspect that a person can be rated on their artistry, I mean, that whole concept, us as artists and stuff who create our own original music, it's a pathetic concept to get up there and think that someone's going to judge you. That's why I'm against, like, Battle of the Bands and any of that kind of stuff, because true artists, if I were those people up there doing American Idol, I'd be actually very embarrassed to myself with all the great artists out there that are actually producing and creating music. These people are just get up there, like, sort of, you know, not lip-syncing, but just, you know, pretty much performing other people's music.
John, is this the new edge of American civilization or the apocalypse of culture?
Oh, I say it's the absolute apocalypse. When I was at the hotel the other day and the receptionist was just oogling and ogling over American Idol, it just was like, oh, my God, we've come to this point where, you know, I would say, yeah, run. You know that song you play, the Pink Floyd one?
Right.
You better run. That's exactly how I feel about it.
Run, says John in Mason City, Iowa. John, thanks very much for calling. Let's put it to the guests we've got lined up right here, and they're pretty terrific. Renee Graham is with us, pop culture critic. She writes for Essence Magazine, for the Boston Globe. She covered the Foxborough, Massachusetts regional auditions for this season's American Idol. Renee, always good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Craig Marks is with us. He's editor-in-chief of Blender Magazine. It's all about music and culture. He joins us from New York. Craig, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
And Mark Spire is with us from Studio City in Hollywood, California. I mean, Michael Spire, excuse me. Michael, good to have you along. Craig, first to you, your magazine's all about the music scene. How does this great big continent fit into it?
It fits in very well for the music scene and the music business. I think the previous caller had a good point, and I think his point sort of encapsulates and misses the whole gestalt of American Idol, which is that it's a hopelessly, shamelessly, fantastically square, unhip program, and the music that comes out of it is equally unhip. And the idea of performers writing their own songs in the great world of music is a fairly rare phenomenon. It's only been in the 60s and so that, you know, writing your own music, writing your own songs became the thing to do, the really cool thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And an idol is a throwback, not just even to the 1940s and 50s when all the singers, all the great singers, only recorded other people's songs. That was, they interpreted other people's compositions. But even, I think, to the 20s or before then, when families gathered around the piano and sang songs, you know, it was in the 60s and beyond, music became very micro-genred. You had rock music, and then you have hip-hop music and R&B and Quiet Storm and all these different formats that divided listeners. You know, you weren't cool because
right.
you didn't like this kind of music. Idol does the exact opposite. It draws people together. It strips out, frankly, the sexual content that rock and roll music brought to music culture.
Everything's pretty mild here.
And returns us to this more innocent, you know, time, for better or for worse.
Renee Graham, all right, here we are. We're back to innocence. It's naive. It's amateur. It's almost simple. I mean, I have to say I had not watched a lot, but I turned in this week to see what it was all about, and I was struck by just the simplicity of it. It really is almost like the high school talent show put up on a national stage. Here's the heart of America singing its heart out. Does this raise us up? Does it throw us in the pits of doom, Renee?
It feels like kind of a time warp when I watch it. It's like this 1950s wholesome, you know, family-friendly entertainment that could appeal in both the blue states and the red states.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big part of this. You know, it isn't about politics. It isn't about religion. It's something everyone can get behind. Having said that, 30 million people can be wrong.
They can? In what direction?
I'm just stunned by the cheesiness of it all. But beyond that, there's something very cynical about American Idol.
Maybe I haven't watched enough exactly to see it. What do you mean?
What I mean in cynical is that, you know, we all know that the music industry, it packages people. This is how we ended up with people like Britney Spears and how big she was a few years ago. American Idol dumps it down even more. You know, it says, let's take these people. We're sort of like grabbing the guy out of the gas station or out of the convenience store. We're going to put him up here. We're going to make him over. And you, America, will decide if he's going to be your next American Idol. You know, there's something to me that's very cynical about that. Like, it's really, you know, building the perfect star.
Yeah, I see that. On the other hand, you know, in a time when it's people want to get up on the high moon beam and it's not easy to do, but it's a whole different life up there. Here's one of their own gets thrown up into the, you know, into the celestial realm of celebrity.
It democratizes celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can happen to this guy. It can happen to you. You've been in a karaoke bar. You've been drunk at an office party. You can sing as well as this guy can sing. You know, that's the thing. I think that's a lot of the appeal. You know, it's one thing to watch singers who can do things that you can't do. But more often than not, you know, the average person can sing probably as good as an American Idol.
But player. A lot of stars have come out of shows like this. I mean, Christina Aguilera, Usher, Rosie O'Donnell. I mean, Lauryn Hill was on Showtime at the Apollo. It's not as though throughout history we haven't had real American stars who we now, we treasure, put up on this path.
But it wasn't quite as manufactured. I mean, you mentioned Usher and Christina Aguilera and Rosie O'Donnell. They came out of the original Star Search, which they tried to revive a few years ago. There was something different about that in that you had You had bands, so you had people who were writing their own music and playing their own instruments. You had comedians. You had the spokesmodel, which was sort of an odd thing, but they had that as well. And that's what they came out of. It wasn't this idea where you had this audition process where people are set up to be humiliated and humiliated again because they dredged up some of those auditions last night to just fill time. And that's the other part of it. It's like they took, I mean, you know, the American Idol finale at this point, it's like the Super Bowl and the Oscars rolled into 3 hours stretched over two nights, you know, and the minutes just seemed to pass like kidney stones.
Let's listen to Taylor Hicks celebrating last night, talking about what it all will mean for him.
I'm living the American dream. This is the American dream, and it's come true for me. And, you know, believe in your dreams. And I want to thank all the people for voting for me because, you know, this is my dream, and it's come true.
Taylor Hicks of Alabama, he had the Alabama governor with his arm around him the day before, urging all Alabamans to come out and vote for their man. Michael Spire, does American Idol make idols? Do these people go on to really become significant entertainment figures?
Well, surprisingly, the first winner, Kelly Clarkson, is really the name that matters the most in terms of the winning contestant. I mean, she not only was she... I think everyone kind of agreed that she was a very talented singer, but she did go on to major, major success. She has 2 Grammy Awards this year. She's a bona fide music star. The danger is that since then, while there have been winners that have, you know, made America proud, made America swoon, gotten jobs, whatever, they haven't quite hit the level of Kelly Clarkson, and I'm afraid that Taylor Hicks, for all of his goofiness, he reminded me a little bit more of kind of a Vegas show kind of singer. He doesn't quite have the chops that, and I think everyone agrees, he's very likable, but he doesn't quite have the chops as someone like a Kelly Clarkson or a Ruben Studdard or someone like that. So I don't think it matters at this point. The ratings, you know, people vote, they love the show, and then it's a matter of who sells what album. But if we're going to look at the history of the winners, right now we only have 1 bona fide star.
But whether they become stars or not, they're pulling a huge industry along behind this great ocean liner of American Idol itself. We appreciate your painting the picture of that for us. Michael Spire, managing editor at Variety magazine. Michael, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Janice is calling from Arlington, Virginia. Hi, Janice. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much.
Yeah.
The first thing I'd like to do is to agree with the caller before, I believe her name was Anna, to say that the most inappropriate parts of the show are the commercials. So I did want to point that out.
Meaning most of the show you feel like you can put your kids in front of.
Well, that was my point. I consider myself, I don't know if anybody else would consider me, but I consider myself relatively well-educated. And I have to, and I work for public broadcasting. Indeed, I'm sitting in the parking lot on my way into the office.
Right.
But I love American Idol, and it has actually, I have to say, meant a lot to our family, in that it is the one show that we can all gather around and watch. And my kids are now teenagers. We started watching it almost from the beginning, and it has been lots of fun. It has educated my kids on different kinds of music. I mean, they hadn't heard of Motown before. And I guess I just really don't agree with the lady who just spoke about the sort of cynical aspect to it. I think that they've done a good job, and I think one reason it is so popular is that it does have an appeal to families. And I don't mean to sound a little too simplistic or anything, but I think
that's important.
There's very little on television that families can watch.
And that is very true. Janice, thanks for calling with that. Renee Graham, how about it? Janice says, let me up. I need something to watch with my kids. Here it is, and we love it.
Well, I think it is a good point. I mean, I noticed, you know, especially during Tuesday night show, you know, it's rated G. How many primetime shows are rated G? Yeah. That just doesn't happen. Yeah. You don't have shows that literally everyone from a 6-year-old to grandma can sit down and watch.
I mean, much more often it's going to say caution, scenes of nudity, sex, foul language.
Exactly. And there's going to be none of that on American Idol. You know, one point I did think about last night while I was watching the finale is that I feel like this is the kind of show that would not have been as big prior to September 11th.
Because?
I think the need to escape, the need to have something that was escapist and nonpartisan. I want to get back to nonpartisan a lot, even though all of the winners so far have actually been from red states.
Of course, Taylor was the first white male to win, but it's all been red states and a lot of southern states.
Yeah, all southern states, mostly women. The only other man to win was Reuben Studdard at the second season, I believe. So I think there's something to that. You know, if you watch scripted TV, you can watch Law and Order, you're going to get something ripped from the headlines. We don't want ripped from the headlines when we're trying to relax after work. People want something that is innocuous and easy, that isn't going to make them think too much, and isn't going to really tax them in any way. You know, we're dealing with war, we're dealing with high gas prices, and you've got American Idol, and yeah, for a lot of people, there's absolutely nothing wrong in watching, you know, Taylor Hicks sing In the Ghetto and dance badly.
Craig Marks, how about it? Maybe we should all just lighten up and go with this. I mean, after all, it's a kind of talent show for the country. High culture has its own venue. But does it mean that the whole musical culture is being taken down somehow?
No, it has no, you know, it has really no effect on someone who's in a garage starting a band that doesn't sound anything like the contestants on American Idol. You know, I would say a couple things in defense of the music. One point that that the Variety editor made is slightly incorrect. Last year's winner, Carrie Underwood, has sold well over 3 million records on the country charts, has taken home lots of country music awards, has had an incredibly successful and very quiet run because it's been in the country world, which doesn't really bleed into the pop world very often. The season 3 winner, Fantasia Barone, is a really interesting soul singer. She's got a really distinct voice. She's worked with really interesting sort of forward-thinking musical people. You know, the talent does tend to win out.
Right now we're joined from Philadelphia by Felicity Paxton. She teaches a course on contemporary American rituals at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. Doctor of American Studies, Felicity Paxton, thanks for being with us. What do you see, doctor, in this great American exercise?
Hi, great to be on the show with you all. I see a number of things, both positive and negative. Where would you like me to start?
You jump in wherever you like.
Well, let me say one thing about Taylor Hicks and his victory. I really think Taylor Hicks is the closest America was going to get right now to being able to reelect Bill Clinton.
Well, you seem as Clinton's doppelganger, his twin up there.
Well, think about it. They're both Southerners. They're both charming. They're both described with adjectives like raw and real.
And a little bit chubby.
A little bit chubby. And they're both of the people. Bill Clinton was always said to be the first black president, jokingly.
And hyper-emotive, ready to emote into those soul songs.
Very ready to emote. Both connecting themselves very wisely back to the 60s. Remember how many times Clinton used that picture of him and JFK? And I think Taylor Hicks did the same thing with his music choices. I mean, how many of us hear the Beatles ever sung in these kinds of competitions?
Okay.
And they're both very physical. I mean, of course, for Clinton, that became something of his downfall. But Taylor Hicks has been jokingly described as sort of minorly Tourette-ic in the ways that he... You know,
twitches up there.
Yes,
so, absolutely. So he brings to mind a former American president. That doesn't necessarily mean Elvis.
No, it doesn't. But I will say, if you look at sort of what's been happening in the culture lately, every time Clinton appears, he gets these ridiculous standing ovations. I mean, look at Coretta Scott King's funeral, for example. Audiences everywhere are greeting Clinton as if to say, we wish we could reelect you.
But So what do you see when 30 million plus Americans come here, when they spend hours on the phone and on their cell phones, text messaging to vote? What's going on? As a kind of cultural anthropologist, how do you describe it?
Well, I think part of what they're doing, I think your previous speaker was absolutely correct. I think it was Renee was saying that, you know, this is, we have to locate this in what's going on in the wider culture at the moment, namely a sense of people are fed up, frankly, with what's happening politically. They feel disenfranchised. There's a lot of people who feel their presidential votes weren't counted in the last two elections by, you know, one means or another. And here's a forum where they feel they can vote and they can actually make a decision. There was an interesting article in the Detroit Free Press recently that said 35% of people who were asked about their American Idol votes said that they thought their American Idol votes were more important than any presidential vote they'd ever cast.
You can vote, and you can vote as many times as you like.
Absolutely. Vote early and vote often.
Is this the reconnecting of the famously splintered American culture? Is this a shared ritual somehow?
Well, certainly in ritual terms, and I have to thank my students who were the ones who said, Dr. Paxton, you need to watch this show. It's, you know, it should be on our syllabus because, after all, we pay attention to things like the Super Bowl and the Oscars. I think that, you know, within ritual studies, which is a subfield of anthropology, there's two lines of argument about televised rituals. And one argument says that they're the death of ritual, because what ritual really needs to be successful is the amassing of actual bodies in a live place together.
Okay.
But I'm more interested in the other argument that says that actually televised rituals can be, you know, profoundly uniting of people, not least because if you actually look at what audiences are doing in relation to shows like American Idol, is they're gathering together. Mm-hmm. Very few people sit and watch American Idol on their own. You've heard callers
get the family, get the neighbors, get the friends in,
right.
And open up the chips, and here we go.
Absolutely. And so there we do have the massing of the bodies in relation to these, you know, televised rituals. And so in a way, it's the revenge of the TV viewers. They're saying, okay, the culture may be massified in ways that are beyond our control now, but we can respond to that and we can make these things personal and we can have our parties and our themed nights
and
get together.
Rituals tend to affirm things. What gets affirmed in American Idol, Felicity Paxton?
Well, I mean, Taylor Hicks would say that what gets affirmed is the American dream.
He says so.
I think some other more troubling things get affirmed by this particular ritual. And here I'll talk a little about my ambivalence towards the show, which I have watched throughout the season, having never watched before. I did actually get hooked.
You sound British, but you'll be American soon if you keep watching this.
That's right. That's right. I'm British with a lot of American in me now.
Yep.
Been here a number of years. But one of the, I think, more problematic things that gets reinforced by a show like this are some troubling things around race and gender. I mean, you just played a wonderful clip of the three judges.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of us watching that are troubled by the way in which what the judges are allowed to do reflects and reinforces a lot of our stereotypes about what men, women of color, are allowed to do.
Talk about that. Randy Jackson, African-American music producer.
Right.
What, is he trapped in a role there somehow?
Absolutely. I mean, he doesn't say a thing that isn't prefaced by cool, yo, dude, check it out, you know, keeping it real. In other words, he's allowed to make comments as long as he all his comments are like off the street and cool, and he's the voice of the street.
And they're always kind of preliminary comments because he opens up, and then we turn to Mother Paula.
Then we have Mother Paula, who makes everybody feel better. No matter what has been said, she is always the comforting one. And so, you know, all the kids tuning into this show are learning that what women's role in culture is to do is to comfort and to offer praise.
Wipe the tears away, lift them
absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And she never does anything but that. And then the only person who gets to be mean is the white guy.
Simon Cowell brings down the hammer.
Absolutely. And I think that those three roles, we've got to look at what they say more generally about gender and race in our culture at large, and who's allowed to be mean and who isn't.
Renee Graham, let me turn to you. What do you think about what gets affirmed? You're clearly on the side of who says this is the cultural apocalypse, but it goes on anyway. Millions are there worshiping at the American Idol. What gets affirmed here? What about in these terms, racial terms?
I think Dr. Paxton makes a really good point. It does sort of reaffirm these set roles we already think we have for these people. You do have Randy Jackson, who's got to be like dog and dude, and just even the way says it, you know, make it hot, the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, he sounds like he just stepped out of, you know, a bad remake of Boys in the Hood. You know, then you have, you know, Paula Abdul, who's been kind of wacky this season, a little wacky, you know.
Yeah,
people tuned
what
in
was the thing about
well.
An affair with somebody? Was that last
that
year?
That was rumors last year. She had an affair with someone.
Was she drunk on the set? And
people
all
have had thought she's been on substances, but there is still that thing that she comforts, she nurtures, she's the one who always finds the good. And in Simon, we have, yes, the white guy who could be mean, but we also have the British guy who could be mean. I think there's something to that as well.
The specialty of those acid Brits.
He's mean, but he's not like us. That's the way those Brits are.
We're not
mean,
they're
mean. As well.
But we want someone to be mean.
Right, and just the fact that he's got it and he's got that dripping, you know, British wit, I think sort of reinforces this idea of the sort of the nastiness and the other. I think it makes him other, even though people really enjoy it.
Craig Marks, what about on the stage in what gets affirmed culturally here, and who wins, who advances, who gets voted for? What's being played out there?
Well, I think it's almost the exact opposite of the problems that exist with the judges. I think the judges are sitcom characters, and they sort of need to be because some things have to remain the same every week. That's why you turn into any television show, you need some constancy and some normalcy. As far as what's affirmed on stage, it's really interesting because what people presume or fear that a show like American Idol would reinforce, beauty over substance, maybe, you know, whiteness over blackness, men over women, even youth over age, almost all of those have been turned on their head when it comes to the winners of American Idol. None of the winners, the female winners, have won because of their beauty. I think they've all won because of the quality of their voices and their sort of broad appeal.
Catherine McPhee, a stunner, and she didn't get it last night.
Right, she didn't win. Mm-hmm. You know, the older performers these days, because they're more seasoned and have probably fuller voices, tend to win out over the younger performers who have a kind of charm but ended up getting voted off, you know, sort of midway through the competition. You know, it's Clay Aiken and Ruben Studdard are two very unusual pop musicians or pop artists, and you would not think that a record label who are starting from scratch, let's say, and we're trying to find someone who would be the next American Idol, there's no way a record company would sign either a Clay Aiken or a Ruben Studdard. They're not photogenic enough. They're not cool enough. They don't have that kind of Britney Spears or Elvis Presley sort of iconic look about them.
So you think Americans are, in a way, more fair, more generous than the industry here?
Absolutely. And part of what they're telling the industry is that you don't know any better than we do. As a matter of fact, we know better than you do.
Mm-hmm. Let's turn to our listeners. Anna's calling from Moline, Illinois. Hi, Anna. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
My comment is, although this show may seem somewhat simple, and it's a cultural comment as well, mm-hmm. It touches many things on a cultural level. One being, and I think this hasn't been mentioned yet, underlying in our culture, if you go and you ask small children what they want to do, what they want to become, a majority of children will say, in some way, they want to be famous.
Mm-hmm. A star.
So we have permeated in our culture, enforced by parents, that being famous is sort of an all fix
yeah.
to life's problems. You know, you don't hear about the young child that wants to go in the Peace Corps or the young child that wants to be a scientist. Permeating our culture right now is that idea of wanting to become famous.
You know, I think you're onto something so big there, because this is not about all the interim steps. This is about skipping all the tough stuff and going right to the sort of platinum-plated life. Of course, that's not out there for most people, but it's easy to fixate on that, Anna.
Exactly, and I think there's a ritual that is missing in our culture, as many of the people have already spoken on, a ritual of initiation for young people. So they never really quite make it to adulthood. So because they don't make it to adulthood, this need to be famous is going to somehow get us to that plateau of becoming someone recognizable to other people in the community.
Right, going to fix it all. Thanks very much for your call, Anna. Felicity, how about it? There's clearly a big river of joy going on here, but Anna says there's a kind of desperation as well, the vicarious desire to escape all the troubles and be that one.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really interesting point. And that's a claim often made about American culture, that it lacks rites of passage that would be appropriate for moving adolescence through to adulthood. I'm not sure that I agree entirely with that claim, having written my PhD dissertation on the high school prom.
Okay. Yeah, there's a resonance.
I do believe we do have some rites of passage. I mean, the question is how seriously we take them. And our own prejudice, you know, our tendency in the West, in the quote-unquote developed world, is to think of ourselves as non-ritualized and to associate ritual with quote-unquote primitive cultures. And I think we could do ourselves a great favor by acknowledging the ways in which we are primitive, all of us, and the ways in which we need ritual. In our daily lives as a way to sort of connect with other people. And I think that that's one of the most positive things, if I may say, about this show. And, you know, to relate back to earlier comments, this really was in the sense that the people are doing the voting, they are turning to a top-down industry. I mean, nobody would argue with the claim that the whole music and fame industry is very top-down. You know, the big companies produce these starlets for us. In this show, it's bottom-up. The people are saying, we are interested in interesting characters, and we don't mind if they've got funny teeth or funny hair or they're a little bit too chubby.
Right. Push them right on up.
Push them right on up. And in that sense, I have to say that Taylor Hicks, as a non-American, the election of Taylor Hicks has done something to increase my faith in the idea that Americans aren't so homogeneous and aren't so aren't as hooked on stereotypes about beauty and the certain kind of style
the
as
kind of twitchy,
their mass media would reflect and suggest
that.
He's
no Britney Spears. He's kind of a twitchy Roadhouse character. Renee Graham, what about it? Celebrating the marvelous upwelling of American generosity here, or Roman games where gladiators down in job loss land are trying to fight their way out of in servitude?
Well, for one, I think I'll feel a lot better when a gray-haired, chubby woman wins.
Okay.
We'll wait and see when that happens. Yeah. We'll see how wonderful America is about that. Sure. I mean, the thumbs up, thumbs down quality of it is wonderful. You can have Simon Cowell criticizing someone and slamming them, and then you can shout Simon down by text messaging and saying, "No, right. I love Catherine McPhee. I have McPhever." And I think that's a huge part of the appeal of this, that you're involved. I think it would be very different if people just watched the show and Randy, Paul, and Simon voted on who was going to be the next American Idol. But even just the title, this person is now your American Idol.
Period.
It's that easy.
Exclamation mark.
You go through 13 weeks of this or whatever, and now you are the American Idol. And that's what, Taylor Hicks was called on CNN and Good Morning America and every show. That's who he is. And it does make it feel very, very easy. It's isn't this idea that, he was traveling around in a ratty van and, playing in, horrible beer joints. He is now the American Idol and you chose him. It'll be interesting to see how much of a career he has.
He's at Craig Marks. How long does this go? 5 seasons now and it's just gotten bigger. Does this keep going? Where's the cliff?
It doesn't seem to be anywhere in sight. And as far as the traveling in the van goes, now that's going to start actually for these contestants. The 10 of them, I think, the 10 finalists go on a tour together. They're all conscripted, essentially, into the American Idol army for a solid year, not allowed to record for anybody else.
Right.
And then they had to put a record out or put multiple records out, and then the people get to decide again.
Yeah.
It's not just that easy to become a star, even if you win American Idol.
The people, they've had their say. American Idol rolls on. Craig Marks, editor-in-chief of Blender Magazine, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
And Felicity Paxton at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. Felicity, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Renee Graham, always great to have you in the studio here. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.